Thank you for joining today's Fireside Chat with Vince Management and hosted by Eric Beder of Small Cap Research. Before we begin, I would like to note that this webcast is being recorded and a replay will be available on Vince's Investor Relations website shortly following its conclusion. In addition, the discussion today may mention forward-looking statements which are made pursuant to the Safe Harbor provision of this Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties, which are more fully described in Vince's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, which are also available on the company's investor relations site. Let me now turn it over to your host, Eric Beder.
Thank you, Quinn. Good afternoon. We are proud to have with us the management team here at Vince Holdings. Vince is traded on New York Stock Exchange, ticker VNCE. With us here is Brendan Hoffman, CFO, CEO, and Yuji Okumura, CFO. Thank you for joining us, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Eric.
Gotcha. Just a quick overview. We're going to provide an overview of the company, talk about some of the growth drivers, and then talk about some of what's going on in terms of near-term results and the potential on the balance sheet and margin opportunities. So, Brendan, let's talk a little bit about the company and the core customer. What is the business here at Vince?
Yeah, so we've been around now since 2002, and we started as a wholesale focused brand. With our founders saw a white space in upscale basics, and we've just kind of grown from there. With opening up our own retail stores about 12 years ago, and obviously e-commerce. So now we're a really well-balanced brand across multiple channels. Still, though, focused on those elevated basics for the consumer, and I think what that's allowed us to do is really have a wide breadth of a consumer that we can target. That our probably best customer is the affluent customer who shops other brands like The Row and Loro Piana and Cucinelli and sees us as a true value. But then we also have the consumers who see us more as aspirational, and so we really play to a wide audience. And I think that's true age-wise as well. We start to get consumers as they enter the workforce, and we really keep them throughout their lifespan because the clothes are that versatile and that understandable. So I think that's a great advantage that Vince has over over other brands.
Great. And this is your second go around here at Vince. And this time you've came back and you and your investor group own the majority of the shares. What kind of brought you back? I know that you left kind of around COVID. What kind of, when you looked at it before the world went crazy here with tariffs and other pieces here, what were the pieces here when you looked at where you felt that you could come back here and add some value to this?
Yeah, so as you said, I spent five terrific years here. Loved my first tenure here. And when the opportunity to acquire Vince came up, really multiple factors. I mean, first of all, the love I have for the brand and seeing the success they had in 2024, I felt was a great launching pad to really grow the brand and grow profitability. So pleased with the brand and equally the team. It was largely the team that I left, which I like to say I'm both insulted they stayed, but gratified now that they're here. And so recognizing that I could walk right in and hit the ground running on different opportunities that they were focused on and that I see without the normal ramp up time that you might have in a new venture. And I think this shouldn't have been a surprise to me, but pleasantly surprised because having had a 5-year gap, just how much the team has grown and matured, and yet the brand has continued to evolve. So the other thing that I knew and saw was they were starting to have conversations with ABG, Authentic Brands Group, about what other things they could leverage the Vince infrastructure for. And I thought that that was really music to my ears because I've always felt that the team we have here could be leveraged in other ways beyond just Vince. And so recognizing that there had been some conversations along those lines, as we are now Vince Holding Company, Vince OpCo, I saw the opportunity longer term to utilize the talented team, whether it be in sourcing, merchandising, wholesale, e-com, DTC, back of house, for potentially other opportunities down the road. I mean, that's not something that right now is top of mind given the headwinds, but I absolutely think longer term, those conversations, whether we explore with ABG or others, is an opportunity. I look at great companies like G3, as a as an aspirational role model.
Let's talk a little bit about Authentic Brands Group. That was a game-changing transaction. It happened in May 2023. What kind of just provide us a quick, some of us quick outline and kind of how it's impacted the company now and look going forward, because obviously
Yes.
it's a big transaction for you
Big,
guys.
yeah, you know, it, obviously it was during the time I was away, but and so Yuji can jump in, but certainly at a time where we needed to pay down some debt and reduce our debt load, it was a great opportunity to do that, and we were able to do so. More specifically, strategically with ABG, I mean, I've known Jamie Salter for going on 20 years now. Have spoken to him over the years about different opportunities. So I was excited when we went and met with him and his leadership team when we were inquiring about doing this transaction, how supportive he was, not only of Vince, but of me and this opportunity. And so the way I think it's really helped us is it's expanded us into other categories. And so we own 25% of the IP, so we benefit from the revenue stream that they're able to generate in categories that we probably would not have entered, whether it be tailored clothing, as a big one, as an example. Handbags was something that we had tried on and off, but now have a partnership with Centric that's launching. Looking into other categories like baby and swim and who knows what else. So I think it benefits us in a couple of ways. One, as I said, we benefit from the revenue stream we get off the additional royalties, but I think it also helps to round out the Vince brand. I think it adds more texture to our assortment, whether some of these categories we'll bring into our stores over time, others we'll just carry online. And then it gives the brand more exposure out there in wholesale as they start to distribute it. So I think it's been quite the positive with the relationship with ABG. And we're technically part of ALG, Authentic Luxury Group, which is something that I think they're focusing more on. They just named a new leader there, Tim Reed, who we are working very closely with. And I don't want to speak for them, but I think they see Vince as kind of centerpiece of what Authentic Luxury Group could be. So I think that will only create opportunities for us going forward. And yeah, they've just been really terrific partners.
Angie, how when you look at this, how did the 70, it was about $77 million that they paid for the brand help with your liquidity? And kind of what was the what's the quid pro quo there in terms of what you guys have to now provide to ABG and to the 20 and to the joint venture?
Yeah, I mean, from liquidity perspective, it has helped us tremendously. When you look about look right before the ABG transaction, we were probably carrying around $120 million of debt at one point. What that cash infusion allowed us to do is, pay down the second lien term loan that we had carrying, which significantly reduced our debt. And then, subsequent transaction has further reduced some of those debt. And when you look at what we have carrying in debt in Q1 that we just reported, we're carrying right now $35 million of debt, which is significantly lower. And then when you look at that $35 million, the components of that, majority of that $27 million of that is really around our revolver facility. So we're carrying significantly less term loan, and we believe that as we progress through the year, we can further reduce our revolver borrowings down.
Great. Okay. So, the end of the year, Brendan, company took over, things were looking great, and the old saying, "Man plans, God laughs," came back, and this crazy little thing called tariffs started to hit the world. Give us an update of kind of, let's talk about where you were and where you are. And, how are you thinking about tariffs now that we're starting to see some of the other Asian countries also receive tariff levels almost at the level of China it is. And how do you plan on flow? How do you plan on responding to this?
Yeah, so this is deja vu all over again because during the first Trump administration, we went through tariffs, not quite to this level, but I remember going down to Washington and testifying about what this would mean for a brand like Vince. So, it's something that we have a little bit of experience with, but it was far more dramatic and difficult this time around. But I have to say, this is where having a seasoned team in place has just provided great benefit. I mean, there was action right away to get boots on the ground over there and start to diversify our sourcing. So where we were, a couple of years ago during tariffs, first time we had started, we tried to de-emphasize China a little bit, but we got a lot of pushback from the suppliers that there were just certain products that just were specific to China. And so this time around, we were still about 80% China. Over a couple of years ago, we were about 65% China going into this year. So when the tariffs hit, particularly early on after Liberation Day, when the tariffs were 158% for China, that was a de facto embargo. So we paused all shipments at that moment, and we got the team, as I said, over there. And credit to our suppliers who have been longtime partners with Vince, recognizing that something had to be done. They quickly, some of them had it, but stood up sister factories in other parts of Asia, and started moving some of their talent around to make sure that the quality was of equal. And so, I think going forward, we won't be nearly as dependent on any one country, whether that, is 20, 25%. It certainly won't be over 60% like it is today. So we feel good about that. In terms of how we're dealing with it, our suppliers have eaten a little bit of the cost. We're going to have to work a little bit sharper, and then we've strategically taken some price changes where we feel like the product warrants it to make sure we're still considered a value. And to your last point, we still don't know where this is going to land. So I was with a manufacturer of a different product category the other day who was lamenting the fact that they had moved a lot out of Vietnam into Cambodia. Now Cambodia looks like it's going to be higher than Vietnam. So I still don't think we know exactly where this is going to land, but we have different contingency plans in place, obviously looking for other places to make savings. And first and foremost, protecting the quality. When I got here 10 years ago, there had been a lot of factory changes, and the customer revolted because she saw that the quality had changed. So that lesson was learned, and so quality is not going to change. And as I said, if we have to work a little sharper, our suppliers work a little bit sharper, and where we think the product warrants it, pass it on. That's what we'll do. And the first indication has been very positive from the trade because we've had a women's market and now a men's market with our big wholesale accounts. And certainly we were a little bit curious to see how they would react. And of course, everybody's reaction first is please don't raise prices. But then when they saw the quality that we were able to maintain, we're really pleased with the order flow, and we'll see in the back half of the year as it reaches the end consumer. But I think I think we'll be in good shape.
When you look at it, obviously it was a significant disruption. Were you able to maintain kind of the flow of product into the wholesale channel and make sure that they got it on time, and the same with the stores? Because obviously we had tremendous ups and downs with the tariff situation in China. How did you manage the chaos on that to kind of be on time and to continue to maintain and support those relationships in terms of product flow?
Yeah, so in some ways the timing was okay because it was April into May, so it was kind of in between seasons. So, we as I said, we paused a lot of held goods in China while we waited to see where this was going to play out, and released it when the China goods I'm talking about, when the China first framework was worked. So we were about 3 or 4 weeks behind where we normally would be. But fortunately, still within the window, the shipping window of our cancellation dates. So while there's a little bit of a push, nothing that over time shouldn't catch up. The thing we were most focused on was Nordstrom's anniversary sale, which launched yesterday or earlier this week, because that's a enormous a business for us and for them. And so we were able to thread that needle. We did bring in some goods into a bonded warehouse here in the US that allowed us to release some stuff more quickly when tariffs got revised. And in our own direct to consumer, I think I said on the earnings call a few weeks ago, how pleased we were with the way business has held up, and that's true. And so we were able to stretch the spring three summer deliveries at full price a little bit longer than we otherwise perhaps would have, which maybe that's a lesson learned for us as we think about flowing goods in the future. And so now pre-fall, what we call pre-fall, has is in the stores. It's been in for a couple of weeks, and so everything's a few weeks delayed, but nothing that I think is going to really impact the consumer. And as I said, we've managed to beat our cancel dates. So from a and our wholesale partners want the goods, so they're flexible as well.
Before we move away from this, Eugene, how should we be thinking about the inventory flows kind of this year versus last year in terms of how the tariffs kind of change that around maybe for the for first and second for this year? How should we be thinking about that?
Again, I think there's a few week lag time, whether that, we'll have to see if how that flows in July, August, which is obviously quarter end for us. If we're working hard to get stuff here. Also now with the August 1st deadline, there's incentives. So there could be some leakage into across July, August, but I think after that we'll be relatively caught up, because it was really just that 1 month pause that we had to go through. But now goods are flowing. I mean, we'll see again where everything lands, and it's as I think you indicated, the whole situation's fluid. But again, I'll put our team up against anybody in terms of being able to manage it. And again, back to why I came back, because I knew the team in place, and they've only gotten better with 5 years of experience.
Okay. All right, let's look at some of the segments and some of the growth drivers here. So wholesale, historically, last year was about 55, 56% of sales. It's a significantly more profitable, depending upon the allocations, than retail. Who in the domestic world are your kind of key players here in the wholesale market?
Yeah, so I think that's one of the changes from when I was here last time. I think when I was here last time, our wholesale business was big, but it was not really growing. It was struggling, and so we had to put more emphasis on direct to consumer. And my background, having been mostly department stores, I didn't appreciate, as you just alluded to, how profitable wholesale is. And so when wholesale is working for a brand like Vince, it makes things a lot easier because of the flow through. So, as you said, we're about 55, 56% wholesale. Nordstrom's, we're a top 10 brand, I think even better than that at Nordstrom's with All In and Vince. And so they're an enormous partner for us. I'm really pleased having come back with the floor space we were able to secure. So generally at Nordstrom, if you go up to the second floor to Contemporary, we're right at the top of the escalator with a meaningful presentation. And I think even more of a change is the way men's has grown at Nordstrom's. When I was here the first time, men's was just kind of one rack of t-shirts. Now we're in all doors, and it's a full assortment. So absolutely Nordstrom's. Bloomingdale's. Bloomingdale's was actually something we had exited pre-COVID to focus on direct to consumer, and went back in during COVID, and that's proven to be a terrific decision. They're doing a great job with the way they present the brand and the expansion of the brand. So and then the Saks Global team, so Saks, Neiman's, and Bergdorf's. obviously had historically large businesses with each of them. It's everybody's hearing what what they're going through. We are in very close communication with them. Richard Baker was my old boss when I was CEO of Lord & Taylor. Mark Metrick and I have known each other for a long time. They're also part of ALG, so we have a lot of advantages when it comes to navigating what they're going through. So we're cautiously optimistic that we'll be able to find great growth among those three banners, because historically they've all been great partners, and are confident they will continue to be. And then Vince has always had a robust specialty store network, to really fill in some markets that perhaps don't have these stores we just mentioned, and or a Vince store. Some of the leading ones, like the Mitchell's Group, who now is controls a lot of the specialty stores, but then just one-offs and that are important to their individual towns that give Vince exposure. So domestically, we're really well situated from with our wholesale business.
When you look at, I am, and it's interesting, we were at the Nordstrom's yesterday, and you're right, the men's department is materially larger than it's historically been. And you're going to anniversary that till early next, let's start by the end of last year. And,
Middle. We'll start the anniversary at the back half of the year, but generally things like this, you still see good growth because you're building off year one, you're a little bit smarter, and so I expect it to continue to provide plus size growth.
what is the how do, when you look at your retail stores and there's a Nordstrom's and a Bloomingdale's in the same mall, how does that, do those reinforce each other and all do better? How do you see the value of doing that? Because obviously Nordstrom is going to be in many of the malls where you are, and so is Bloomingdale's, is the same kind of more customer focus.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we definitely think about, especially now that they, compared to my first time around, where maybe the assortments weren't robust enough to really satisfy the Vince customer as fully as we want. I mean, now I think that is something we do look at, is how well covered are we in a certain center. But I will also say, and this goes back to my Neiman Marcus days, when 20 years ago, when Monobrand started opening up their own stores. We found it just reinforced the strength of the brand. I mean, there are going to be certain consumers who want to buy Vince at Nordstrom's because they're mixing and matching with other brands, and that's fine, and they want their loyalty points. And then there's going to be other people who want to buy deeper and see the entire Vince assortment, so they come to our stores. So we certainly consider it, but we don't shy away from it, nor have I gotten any complaints from the majors if we open up a store in their market, because again, I think they find it just adds brand awareness to the brand itself.
Right. I know that you've been somewhat de-emphasizing this. How does off price kind of fit into the whole wholesale world for you in terms of what you want to do there?
Yeah, I mean, de-emphasize, sure. I mean, we always want to be more full price, but it's an important part of the equation. Always has been. My first job at Neiman Marcus was I ran the last call stores, and I really believe in what Nordstrom Rack said back then was it's a gateway into Nordstrom's. We're getting people earlier on in their affluent, in their when they're younger and less affluent, and they're finding a brand like Vince through the off-price channel, whether it be our own outlet stores or Rack or TJ Maxx. And I will say, I've gotten, again, no complaints from anybody that they feel like we're over-penetrated at any of those banners. And also, obviously, they help us not only with product we make for them, MFO, but with liquidating end of season products so we can keep fresh. So I'd say the de-emphasizing is the right word, more in the sense that we want to grow our full price business, but it's certainly not something we're walking away from or don't appreciate the value it brings, both to expanding to new consumers and also just the liquidation of goods.
Okay. right, let's pivot to retail. So as you mentioned, as wholesale's 56, retail's close to 44% of sales last year. Talk to me about the store count. And I know historically the focus has been kind of on New York City, LA. How should we be thinking about the stores, the expansion opportunities here, for the channel on that?
Yeah, so we have about 58 stores between outlet and full price. Obviously, the majority of them full price. That's not too different from when I left 5 years ago. So over time, we've opened up some new stores. We've closed stores that aren't performing to the extent we would like, and that will continue. And you mentioned yes, we're heavily focused in New York and California just because of the consumer base, but we're pretty broadly covered throughout the country. We have two stores that we are opening over the next few months, and they're in smaller markets, Nashville and Sacramento. So data showed that we had opportunities in both, and so that will continue to be our focus, is to look to fill in gaps where we think there's opportunity. Opening up these new stores always gives e-commerce a bit of a lift, so we factor that in. To your question earlier, we don't see any real, certainly not a negative impact if we have good wholesale relationships in the region. And then, as store leases come up, we'll look to see if they make sense in terms of what they're adding to the bottom line and to the overall brand. So, one of the things I said my first time around, which I still say, is it's not either or when it's wholesale or retail. It's and. We want to be successful in our direct-to-consumer business, and we want to be successful in our wholesale business. And certainly, that's what the best brands in the industry are able to do.
Great. And look, behind you is a picture of one of your renovated, upgraded stores. I know you did three of those in Q1, primarily, if I remember correctly, in New York City and Greenwich. What is the opportunity with the renovations? Kind of what has been the impact from some of the newer stores? And, obviously, when you're doing those, when the leases come up, you're kind of figuring out, does it make sense to do this? How should we be thinking about kind of the potential for this part of the business too?
Yeah, so we also did Stamford, we did Mercer Street. So sometimes their lease enforced as we renew a lease that there's an obligation, and sometimes it's we just recognize the opportunity to do the remodel. And so it's still a little bit early, but the results have been very promising with each of the remodels. You mentioned Greenwich. That's kind of my home store. So, I would when I walked in, I was so thrilled with the way they were able to repurpose the store, took out the back register, to open up the store. It you could tell the difference, and I think it made it much more shoppable and fresh. Brought it to life a little bit more. So, I think we will continue to look for opportunities to remodel. I will say, given the current headwinds that we've talked about, I don't see us doing anything anymore this year. But certainly, again, as leases get extended, and we just see opportunities, I think we have a good formula now. We have a great team that knows how to do it very efficiently, and we've learned how to be scrappy here at Vince, and I'm glad to see that hasn't changed since I left. So, we can generally get a big bang for our buck, and I think the other thing that we'll think about, Eric, is as these new categories come into play through the relationship with ABG, how we need to make some changes in the stores for the categories we want to highlight, that we want to add, because clearly the stores were not set up, most of the stores were not set up with these new categories in mind. So that's something that we'll evaluate as well.
Let's talk a little bit about that. You, if I remember correctly, you're not obligated to take the new ABG license categories. That's your choice in how you do it. Obviously, those categories will probably end up with some of your wholesale partners, which I would assume will help your overall business and with them too, in terms of bringing a brand even further to the forefront. What should we be thinking about for the back half of this year and next year in terms of the product offerings coming in from ABG that you and kind of your people are excited about and will be seeing in the stores kind of going forward?
Yeah, so just to step back, the one light long-term license we've had this predates ABG. It was the shoe license with Caleres, and so that's been around for a long time. And one of the things I think it has done for us, I think the prices are a little bit more they're a little bit more democratic than our clothing. They're probably sit a little bit beneath where our clothing is. But I think they've given us great brand awareness. And so as we add in these other categories, and they get widespread placement in the in distribution, these wholesale in the wholesale accounts, it's only going to expand the Vince name, which I think is hugely important for us. So it's going to be a great marketing tool. In terms of how we will manage them within our own direct to consumer, as I mentioned, I think within stores, we'll have to figure out in certain stores where we can test the categories. Certainly excited about handbags, belts, small leather goods, and even tailored clothing. We have a license with Peerless there that I've been associated with Peerless for almost 30 years. When I found out they were our licensee, I wasn't quite sure about where they had taken the business to be at the level of Vince. But I'll tell you that I went into Bloomingdale's when I first got back to Vince, and I immediately bought a Vince Sport Coat because I thought it looked great. And so I'm really excited that they I think they opened up a factory in Canada that focuses on more high-end product. And I think that's going to be a great addition to Vince. So whether or not we're able to carry it in all stores, again, we're not really set up for that, but we'll certainly carry everything online. We are working on implementing a new dropship program so that we could take advantage of our licensees and be able to offer to our consumer without the burden of having to hold the inventory. So I think that's a great opportunity for us as well.
And you participate also because you own 25% of the still own 25% of the entity that controls the IP.
That's
So
right.
those license
And
sales will eventually somewhat flow through to you as a dividend payment from those people.
absolutely. And that's happening. And we've seen that grow. And so we have a vested interest to support that for the annuity that that it provides.
Great.
And
And talk to you too.
I will say ABG has been very respectful of the brand. I mean, they have been, very mindful of running things by us first to make sure we're comfortable with how they're thinking about it, the supplier, the distribution. They recognize the what they have in Vince. As I said, I think that's part of the reason why they have ALG, the luxury group, and so couldn't be more pleased with the way they have continued to protect the brand integrity.
Okay. Last piece of retail online. I know you've continued to ramp and improve the sophistication of the online business. How should we be thinking about that as a driver and a loyalty driver also?
Yeah, I mean, I think the business has been growing. We have a new leader, Kat, who came in just about a year ago. And I can tell you, just when I compare the team that's in place now and really understanding consumer insights and conversion, and it's a big upgrade. And so, as we think about where we're going to invest money, marketing, loyalty, and upgrading the e-commerce site, will be front of mind, because we, again, see that as a great way to reach new consumers. And as the brand gets more brand awareness, as we've been discussing, either through new categories or new store openings or new wholesale openings, people naturally gravitate to Vince.com.
Let's talk about some of the fledgling pieces here. So international, you recently opened up your second store in London. Talk to us how international fits here in terms of maybe the wholesale, the retail piece. What do you want to do with that? Obviously, Vince is a nice luxury brand, with the vast majority of sales still here in the US.
Yeah, I mean, we've historically been around 10% of our business has been overseas. We have a showroom in Paris. We have a warehouse in Belgium and Hong Kong to support the business. We've had great distribution in the major department stores around the world, with great, and that really, is around the world. We've opened up two stores of our own in London. One was about 6, 7 years ago in South Kensington, and then we just opened up the one you alluded to, Marylebone, which is doing great, really fantastic out of the gate. So we see international as a big opportunity for us, whether that's through opening up additional stores. I mean, we're going to be very careful about that, just given the capital investment, but perhaps there are other opportunities, as Marylebone has proven, whether that's finding partners on our own or through ABG. The brand resonates around the world. The clothing is very understandable in all parts of the world, and we've seen that. So we expect international to be part of that growth engine, that drives Vince over the $300 million marker and provides outsized growth. But lots of different ways to get that done through international, and we're assessing those.
And if I remember correctly, you still had, as part of the ABG deal, you still maintain direct rights to a good amount of countries here beyond where you are right now, correct?
Yeah, we do. We control well, places that we're already doing business. They control places that we weren't doing business, and if they can find a way to bring us to certain regions that maybe we weren't able to conquer, again, that just adds to our new royalty stream and our brand awareness. But again, that's where the partnership has come in, is talking together what opportunities there are either in regions we're in, but maybe, they can help us do more, or regions that just we haven't been able to enter.
Okay. No, that's gonna be a pretty, that could be a pretty, that should be a pretty exciting opportunity going forward.
Yep.
And of course, there are no tariffs when you ship it to the United Kingdom as opposed to the US.
We've tried to, yes, leave it at that.
Men's. So men's has been a big, the last year plus, it's continued to grow. Tell me how you kind of nurture that, where it is, where you want to get at that, and how do you get there with that?
Yeah, so men's has, well, it wasn't part of our initial history. For the last 10, 15 years, we've been a dual gender brand, and that's only grown. Me personally, it's obviously all I wear, and so to come back after 5 years and see how the line has evolved and developed, I'm like a kid in a candy shop, in our stores. It's about 25% of our business right now. We want to approach 30%. Some of the growth right now is coming through what we mentioned before, the expansion in our wholesale accounts. Yeah, I think if we can approach 30%, that would be probably the right number to get to. Kudos to the team for the way that they have evolved this over the last few years. But yet maintaining the DNA of Vince.
I know that you have a store in Roosevelt Field that's a men's only store, which then is right next to a women's only store. Does that make sense to potentially expand out for specific local markets for such a thing like that?
Yeah, I think generally in retail, you're better when the stores are connected. That you can have one big offering because, quite frankly, a lot of women buy from men. I know my wife does a lot of the shopping for me. So I remember, this goes back 35 years ago or 30 years ago, when Bergdorf Goodman moved their men's store across the street. They realized, well, it's a beautiful store at the time, that the volume they would lose just by not having, women traffic in the store. So I think overall, we try to stay away from men's only stores. I know in Abbot Kinney we kind of have them separated, but there's a cut through. So yeah, we'll experiment with different things, but I think we're best when we can just house them all together. A different sort of example, but our Westport store, which is a fairly tiny store, I know you've been to, and It didn't have men's when I was here 5 years ago because it was just deemed to be too small. And yet the team was able to not expand the store, just reconfigure the merchandise offering, where now it has a viable men's assortment, and we've seen how much that's lifted the store.
Yeah, that's got to be one of your smallest stores, and it does a tremendous amount of business,
Yeah.
size and productivity in that store. Let's talk about productivity, some margins. I know we're kind of now going to a little bit more normalized world. Last year, the margin was around 2.5% on the operating margin. What should we be thinking about the goals here? This is a, to your point, it's not a high luxury brand, but it is an aspirational slash luxury brand. And usually the margins in those businesses can be better than where we are now. How should we be thinking about that? And again, I know this year the whole tariffs thing, it's somewhat of a pause. But what should longer term reinvestors thinking about the opportunities here for margins and other pieces going forward?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when you look at, like you said, our adjusted operating margin for 24 was, around 2.5%. When you look at it, even going back a year ago, that was only 1.4%. So we've been definitely steadily been growing in terms of that initiative. And last year, a lot of the growth has come from our focus on the quality of sale and our gross profit expansion. When you look at our results for the year, we expanded our gross margin by 4%. In terms of dollars, it was an $11 million uptick from FY23. So when you look at that, we continue to see opportunities in the margin expansion. Like you said, we will still have significant uphill battles with some of the increased duty as well as tariffs and the and inevitably some of the freight cost increases that we might potentially see. But I mean, when you look at what we've accomplished this year, we've been able to avoid, like Brendan said, like the significant portion, like the 150 over 150% tariff period for China. We've been able to avoid that thanks largely to the the manufacturing team as well as the operations team on the full control and the flow of the goods. And then as we think about the long-term goals, like we still continue to see like I said, uphill battles, but we are looking at various strategies from the perspective of how can we better operate our stores more efficiently. Some of the work around how we can improve our margin in the wholesale business, we continue to look at that, and as well as we looked at a lot of the margin, and we'll continue to look at SG&A spend as well, and being very strategic about where we spend and getting the most out of this SG&A leveraging going into this year as well as into next year.
And I think, Eric, that's what we were started, where we have to find other ways to leverage this platform to grow sales. So whether the Vince brand, obviously, and then where there are other opportunities to leverage this infrastructure that I know no can do more, because you're right, we need to get that profitability to a higher level.
Great. Let's talk a little bit of super micro here. So Q1 came out, it was a little bit above expectations. Could you go over the Q2 guide and kind of the logic for the pieces? I know you've not provided a guide for the year, so I'm not asking about that. Just kind of a little bit update on what your Q2 guide was and kind of what the thought process was for the pieces that you provided.
Yeah, I mean, for Q2 guidance, we are looking to be on track of especially the consensus that's on out there. Some of it was related to some of the uncertainties. When you look at the net sales expectation, there were some uncertainties about the timing shift in terms of the product flow and when that might potentially come in. And from the margin perspective, I think we continue to stay on track with what we guided to at the beginning of the at the last earnings call.
Okay. All right. Is there anything we missed?
No, I think you were as always pretty exhausted with the questions, and as I think you've alluded to, there's headwinds that's facing the industry, but I have full confidence that Vince is going to be able to handle them as well, if not better than anyone else. And the strength that the brand showed in 2024 is only continuing. And so, yeah, we'll get through kind of these transitory things and really feel very confident about what the Vince brand and the Vince Holding Co. can do as we look to the next few years.
Yeah, I think that when we look at it, the Vince growth story hasn't changed. I think it's actually gotten better in the last 6 to 9 months here. We're obviously dealing with a tariff-driven issue here that is affecting all apparel retailers. And given that you started 60% plus initially, it's affected you a little bit more than some of my other players here. But the longer-term drivers in terms of new stores, international expansion, men's, wholesale, none of those have really changed. In fact, I could argue they've gotten actually some of them have gotten a little bit better in the last 3 to 6 months. So I know this has been a frustrating period, probably, I'm sure, in terms of what you thought was going to happen versus what the real world says. But I think it's all great. And like I said, for people who don't realize, we have a buy rating and a $4 price target on Vince. And that's it. All right. Thank you. I really
Terrific.
appreciate you taking the time. And I guess we'll see you hopefully maybe in the branded store.
That'd be great. Thank you, Eric. Really
Thank
appreciate
you.
it.
Thank you.